Hello and welcome. This is Dr. Rita Marie Loscalzo, and this is all about adrenal testing. We're going to learn how to look at labs as a way of testing them. And it's going to be really exciting. There's a lot of information here to share, and we will have the opportunity to go into it in a fair amount of depth. So as you know, I always have at the beginning of my presentations this little medical disclaimer. And whenever you're doing presentations to people, you should be doing similarly. It's while it's not necessarily important in this presentation because I'm teaching you as practitioners, I want you to be aware that this information is not intended for you to be using to allow people to think that it's a part of a medical procedure and you're giving them medical advice versus coaching and advice and education. And that's a really important piece, unless you are a medical doctor or a practitioner who's sitting face to face with someone doing a conversation and you've done a comprehensive workup, then it is medical advice and you need to be careful of what you're telling them. But if you're coaching them, if you're on the phone and you're speaking to people, and you're speaking to people in a group, it's not medical advice, it's education. We're here today to assess the adrenal glands. We're here today to assess the function of the adrenal glands, talk about why we should assess the adrenal glands, what the function of those are, a little bit about the anatomy and biochemistry overview, enough for you to be really reviewed so that you understand how to read the tests and how to assess them. We're going to look at symptoms of adrenal dysfunction. We're going to look at physical exam signs in adrenal dysfunction, because remember, this is all part of assessment of your adrenals. We're going to look at the stages of adrenal dysfunction, tests for adrenal dysfunction, and then cases. It's the cases that are the real learning. It's the more you see a case and hear it reviewed, and then the more cases you do, the better off you're going to be. So I highly recommend that as part of your learning experience, that you order an adrenal stress test. As we get to those tests, I'll explain to you the differences between various labs and what they offer. But I would highly recommend that you order those. Stress. So let's just talk about what stress is, because stress is what we need to know about, because that's what affects your adrenal glands. That's what tires your adrenal glands. That's what overworks your adrenal glands. And there's a lot of reciprocal dysfunction with the adrenals when you're under a lot of stress. Stress is really defined as a force that tends to strain or deform. Now, there are good stresses and bad stresses. You can stress a muscle with a heavy weight. You lift that weight. That's too much for that muscle. Some of the muscle tissue breaks down. New muscle tissue replaces that, and it becomes stronger. And that's how bodybuilders and weightlifters get their physiques, from a stress on the muscle. It also can be a physical, chemical, or emotional factor that causes your body to have mental or bodily tension. And it not just may be a factor in disease, I would venture to say that it is almost always a cause of disease. And then Hans Selye, he died in 1982, but back in the 50s, he first addressed stress as a health challenge and defined it. So what's chronic stress? Because stress is really not necessarily bad. We've got these adaptations in our body that deal with stress. As long as stress is what it was kind of intended by nature to be, which is a short-lived, quick strain on the body that your body responds to and then goes back to eating mangoes off the tree. So what is chronic stress? Chronic stress is a stress that your body is regularly subjected to on an ongoing basis, sometimes daily, sometimes 24/7. And it can be coming from all different aspects of your life. It could be a physical stress, like an old trauma or source of pain and inflammation in your body. Sometimes a hidden source of pain and inflammation in your body that you don't even know about, but is causing your body to go into a stress response. Emotional stress. And there's all sorts of things related to family and work and financial situation and the politics and not liking the politicians and school. There's so many things that play into emotional stress, relationships. There's environmental stresses. We don't necessarily think of these as stresses on the body, but your adrenals get pulled in whenever there's a stress. And when there's an environmental stress, like it's too hot or it's too cold and you don't have the appropriate shelter. That's an environmental stress. We in our modern society generally don't have that, although when we have something like a hurricane that knocks people's powers out for 5 or 6 days and it's cold, they're having an environmental stress just trying to keep warm. We have more chemical stresses in our environment, right? We have the chemicals from factories spewing out waste. We have the chemicals from pesticides and people's pharmaceuticals in the water, the chemicals that we add to water to purify it. A lot of environmental stresses. And then we have food stresses. Eating foods that are actually harming your body, that are causing your body to become inflamed, that your body might be allergic or sensitive to, and it mounts an immune response. So all of these are stresses on the body. And a lot of people will say, well, I don't have any stress. You know, I'm in a good relationship and I have plenty of money. But there may be some of these other things that are going on which are causing their adrenal glands to burn out. Chronic stress will compromise critical body systems. It compromises your ability to keep your health up, to maintain vibrant health, to have lots of energy, to ward off illness and disease. Chronic stress. It costs us $1 trillion a year in healthcare costs, in lost time at work, in all sorts of aspects of our lives. Chronic health costs. It's largely ignored by mainstream medicine. It's given kind of the off, like, oh yeah, stress. Stress can cause that. It's all in your mind. You must be stressed. Here, go take some Prozac. Rather than addressing the real issue, rather than addressing the causes of the stress and teaching people how to mitigate those causes and also learning to understand the physiologic effects on the body, how to rebuild the adrenal glands. I believe that it's a common culprit behind virtually all symptoms and conditions. And you'll see as we go through the mechanisms why that might be. So what kind of presenting complaints are you going to see in your practice? These are 5 of the most common. Sure, there's others, but these are 5 of the most common ones. Overweight or normal weight with a lot of extra belly fat. Fatigue. Burnout, can't stay awake all through the day. Gut issues, huge. I hear it all the time. Indigestion, bloating, gas. Inability to keep down food, reflux. Gut issues. You're also going to see a lot of depression and anxiety. Many people that come in to see you may already be on antidepressant medication or anti-anxiety medication. And biggie too, male and female hormone imbalance. Not just female hormone imbalance, male hormone imbalance as well. And that can be male hormones in a female or hormone imbalance in a male, right? And it's usually when there's hormone imbalance, it is imbalance between the male and the female hormones and between some of the estrogens and progesterones, etc. And hormone imbalance can be caused by stress and by your adrenal gland dysfunction. So what I'd like to do next is go over the function and the anatomy and physiology of the adrenal glands briefly. So what's the function of your adrenal gland? Pure and simple, to keep you alive, to keep you safe in the face of danger, to allow you to run away from danger, get away from a hungry tiger as it's chasing you, or a mugger in an alley in our modern terms, because we don't have a whole lot of hungry tigers walking the streets. To help us to fight off predators when we can't get away, and to help us basically to survive. And there's all sorts of mechanisms built in and physiologic effects that your adrenals, when they come into play, cause to happen throughout your body. And those are normal and helpful responses. These are hormones that are produced to keep you safe. It's when it gets out of balance that becomes a problem. It's when the stress is not a once a week running away from a tiger situation, but a day in and day out stressful situation. Any of the ones we've talked about, whether it be inflammation in some sort of part of your body, whether it be gut issues, gut inflammation, whether it be the foods you're eating, the water you're drinking, the air you're breathing, the emotions. All of these things play into stress, and that's what causes stress in our modern times. So let's take a look at the anatomy of the adrenal glands. Your adrenal glands sit on top of your kidneys, little bitty guys that sit on top of your kidneys. And you can see that in this picture, okay, right on top of your kidneys in your back. These glands are small. Each of them weighs between 3 and 5 grams, right? To give you an idea of how small 3 to 5 grams is, think about your average vitamin. Let's just say you have a vitamin C capsule that's 500 milligrams, right? If you were to take, or let's say it's 1,000 milligrams, that's more common. That's 1 gram. If you were to put 3 of those to 5 of those, depending on your size, of course, in your hand, that's about how much your adrenal glands weigh. It's about as much as 3 vitamin C capsules. They're tiny. They weigh a little bit. They're super powerful. And as you can see, they sit right above the kidneys. Here's the thing, though. They're so, so tiny, and they have the one of the highest rates of blood flow per gram of tissue, which means that they are active a lot, that they are reading your bloodstream, that they are sensing what's in your bloodstream, and they're acting accordingly. They also have the highest concentration of vitamin C per gram of any other tissue in your body. So when you're under a lot of stress and your adrenals are just using and using and using their materials to create hormones to protect you, you're using a lot of vitamin C. A lot of vitamin C. The way that they produce their hormones on a daily basis is in a rhythmic cycle. Highest in the morning, lowest at night. Highest in the morning to wake you up, to wake up your body systems, to get them alert and ready to go. Lowest at night so you can drift off into sleep. It's called the circadian rhythm, and we're going to look at a picture of the circadian rhythm in just a little bit. Let's look at your adrenal anatomy and the hormones that they produce. We'll go into a little bit more detail. There's an inner zone, right? The medulla, and that's in this picture. It's the pink part. That's the adrenal medulla. That produces adrenaline, which is also called epinephrine, and it produces noradrenaline, and that's also called norepinephrine. These are the quick-acting hormones that also act as neurotransmitters. There are neurotransmitter receptors in the brain for these and in various parts of the body in the nerves because it transmits neural impulses. And it gets the signal really quickly to the brain that there's danger. And there's response as a result. The thing about epinephrine and norepinephrine is that they are short-lived. Yeah, they cause your heart rate to go high and your blood pressure to go high and your palms to get sweaty. That's the instant response to stress. That car's about to cut you off on the highway and all of a sudden you feel it. You feel your heart thumping. You feel your hands get clammy. But that response goes down relatively quickly. And then in the outer zone, meanwhile, is producing cortisol. And the outer zone produces cortisol, DHEA, aldosterone, and some other androgen, which are male kind of hormones. So that's the outer part. Okay, the cortex, you'll see that on the picture, the adrenal cortex right there. Okay, and there's different zones, the zona glomerulosa, the zona fasciculata, and the zona reticulatis. You don't need to remember those. It's just nice to know that if you see those terms anywhere in a medical article. Cortisol gets released shortly after the stress occurs, and the cortisol levels rise, and the cortisol's role is to go to your storage of glucose and bring it into the bloodstream to prepare your muscles so that they have the energy to run away, get away, or fight. It causes your heart rate to beat fast. It causes your blood pressure to go up because the goal is to get extra blood to the extremities so you can fight or run, and also extra glucose, energy, fuel to those extremities. And we'll be looking in a moment at some of the effects of cortisol. Then you have DHEA. And DHEA are polar opposites. So when the cortisol goes high, the DHEA gets low. When the cortisol then goes down again, the DHEA can come back up. And we're going to look at in our labs what chronic elevation of cortisol due to stress does to your DHEA levels. DHEA is a really important hormone. It helps you with repair and rebuilding. It's often called the anti-aging hormone. And it is an important part of healing and rejuvenation and keeping you young. When your cortisol levels go high, the DHEA goes down. DHEA and cortisol, as well as a lot of your other steroid hormones, stem from the same precursor molecules. So using a lot of that precursor for cortisol leaves less available for DHEA. We're going to look at that on a chart. We're going to talk about a concept you might have heard of before called the pregnenolone steal. Aldosterone affects the kidneys and has the kidneys hold on to extra fluids. And then the androgens. So this is a picture, I promised, of the cortex, the adrenal hormones, and how they are produced. You'll see at the very top is what you might be very confused about, is cholesterol. Cholesterol is the bad guy, isn't it? Cholesterol causes heart disease, doesn't it? Wrong. The wrong kind of cholesterol, and cholesterol deposited in the wrong places causes problems. But cholesterol is a mandatory molecule. Getting your cholesterol levels too low can be a problem with your hormones. It's at the top. But it requires vitamin B5, pantothenic acid, in order to produce it, convert it downstream into the hormones that you need, particularly the first metabolite, which is pregnenolone. Under stress, the conversion of cholesterol into pregnenolone goes down. Kind of ironic because you're using up more of it and it goes down. So you see people a lot who have high cholesterol and low hormones. That's why vitamin B5 is really important and we put people on high doses. So cholesterol gets converted into pregnenolone. I like to talk about it as the grandma because it's got a lot of children and grandchildren in this process. And pregnenolone gets converted to 17-hydroxypregnenolone or progesterone. Progesterone, watch the path. Pregnenolone goes straight down to cortisol, which is why we call it the pregnenolone steal. So pregnenolone gets converted into progesterone. But if you're under a lot of stress, instead of it getting converted to progesterone or 17-hydroxypregnenolone, it gets converted downstream to cortisol. And if your cortisol levels are through the roof because you're under a lot of stress, whether it be emotional stress or any of the other stresses we talked about, you're going to have a decrease in pregnenolone. If you look to the right on this chart, the 17-hydroxypregnenolone, look at the cool stuff it converts to. Ha, DHEA. So if cortisol steals too much of the pregnenolone, you're going to make less DHEA. But look at what DHEA can convert to. Testosterone. Testosterone gets converted down to the various estrogens. If we have too little of the pregnenolone left because cortisol's stolen it all, we have less DHEA. DHEA controls your sex drive in addition to all those other things. So the idea is that, wait a minute, if DHEA is low, we don't want to have sex drive because we don't have the raw materials to reproduce. So DHEA gets converted to testosterone, estrogen, and these are the three estrogens, estradiol, estrone, and estriol, and you'll learn more about that in our hormone module. Okay, so this is just to give you an overview. The quick thing, I'm going to underline the ones that you should just take note of. Pregnenolone gets converted to progesterone, gets converted to aldosterone. Reason people have a lot of cravings for salt is because the cortisol decreases the amount of aldosterone and you just pee away all your fluids and you pee away all your salt, your sodium. So cortisol comes from pregnenolone, estrogens come from pregnenolone, DHEA and and testosterone. The others are intermediate metabolites that we don't really talk about a lot, except when we're studying the biochemistry of the hormone. We talked about what olden day stresses were. Modern day stresses are there all the time if you allow them to be, which is why it's so important that you work with your people on stress management. It's not enough to just say, oh, let's do an adrenal test, let's find out what's wrong, and let's put you on a protocol to repair it, if you're not also addressing the underlying stress. It's like putting out a fire at one end of the house while you're making fire at the other end of the house. That's what it's like. We don't want to do that. We don't want to do that. Okay? We want to be putting out the fire and then rebuilding. Putting out the fire and rebuilding. So the stressful events can be a trauma, a fall, a car accident, a fall off a ladder, a skiing injury. It can be overwork, working long, long hours, staying up too late, not getting enough sleep. Childbirth's a stress, right? There's a huge stress on a woman's body. And a lot of times you see rebound adrenal dysfunction if they weren't really well nourished before and during and after their pregnancy. Marriage, divorce, job change. Some of these seem like good stresses, but you know, getting married, right? The whole process of getting married and having to adjust to a new life in a new place with a new partner. Of course, getting divorced is very stressful. And a job change, even if it's going from a job you don't like so much to a job you do like so much, it's just the stress of change. So we're all having exposure to these all the time. And then, of course, your gut. Food intolerance, leaky gut, pathogens in the food, pathogens that grow in your gut as a result of imbalanced flora. These are stresses on your system, and the adrenal glands are constantly perceiving these stresses. And then, of course, the increased toxins. We have a much more toxic environment now than we had in the last century, you know, early last century. And as a result, your detox systems get overwhelmed and overloaded. So let's briefly talk about the effects of cortisol. Cortisol affects every system in your body. The effects it has on your musculoskeletal system, well, it thins collagen tissue. It steals away vitamin C, and the collagen tissue gets really low. There's neurologic tissue, and it causes it to weaken. And also, it can cause your bones to get brittle because of creating an acid environment. The byproducts of adrenal functioning, of cortisol, is an acidic residue, and your body has to balance that, and a lot of that is drawn from your bones. Cortisol can have neurologic implications. Cortisol has an effect on neurotransmitters. It has an effect on brain chemistry, has an effect on your hormones, and we just went over that in detail because of stealing away the precursors. It has an effect on your metabolism. It actually speeds up your metabolism when it's there and then causes a rebound slowing down of your metabolism. Actually, it speeds up the accessibility of fuel, but it actually will slow down the metabolism a little bit so that you have more fuel to last longer. Inflammation, huge. The byproducts of cortisol cause inflammation. Cortisol damages various tissues. Cortisol affects leptin levels in your system. It affects insulin levels in your system. It affects inflammatory mediators that the immune system produces. Depletes your inflammatory nutrients. It depletes your fatty acids. It causes your blood sugar to go up because you need fuel. And in causing your blood sugar to go up, it usually finds amino acids that it can turn into quickly into sugar by breaking down your muscle tissue. And then as a result, it causes your insulin levels to rise, which causes insulin resistance, which causes havoc in the whole rest of your body by thickening your blood vessel linings and increasing your blood pressure and creating a diabetic situation with brittle blood vessels and affecting peripheral nerves, your eyes, your macula. And then finally, it has an effect on energy. You feel zapped and drained after you've had this cortisol. You feel really energetic while the cortisol is raging, and then afterwards you feel drained. You feel drained. I know people who come to me and they say that they have great energy during the week and they work and they work and they work and they don't get much sleep, and then they plan on to go play golf or something on Saturday and they wake up with a cold. And it happens over and over again because your body's go, go, go with cortisol, and cortisol has anti-inflammatory effects, and then the rebound is everything goes and your immune system is shot. This is a brief overview of the pregnenolone steal that I talked about. So you've got pregnenolone, progesterone, cortisol. When cortisol steals that, it takes it away from all the rest of your body. So let's talk a little bit about the circadian rhythm. It is said that physical repair happens between 10 p.m. and 2 a.m., that psychological repair happens between 2 and 6 a.m., and 3 hours after dark, ACTH decreases. ACTH is a hormone put out by your hypothalamus. That's what stimulates your adrenals to produce. So a decrease in ACTH causes a decrease in cortisol. And the light, the stimulation in through your brain, it causes your pituitary to shut that down. So 3 hours after dark, normally the cortisol levels should be going down. But since we live in these light environments, right, our houses are bright, we don't necessarily get that natural decrease in cortisol. And if you're watching TV before bed, and say you're watching either the news or an exciting program, you're going to have elevated cortisol. And as that cortisol is high, it keeps you awake. So if you have issues or have a patient with issues with insomnia, difficulty falling asleep or waking up throughout the night, ask them about their nighttime activities. Ask them about how much TV they watch or computer work they do, how much stimulation they have. And you might even suggest that they start to dim the lights. That affects melatonin as well as cortisol. And as your cortisol drops, your pituitary is triggered to produce growth hormone. And growth hormone is known for helping you to release fat from stores and build up muscle tissue. So it does that by transporting amino acids into your tissues to facilitate growth and repair. But if the cortisol is high, instead, the amino acids are released from muscle stores and your blood sugar elevates, causing insulin to rise, and then that suppresses your growth hormone. So when cortisol is high, it suppresses growth hormone. Okay? And then when it does that, the high cortisol then is creating high blood sugar by releasing amino acids. So instead of storing lean muscle mass, you're releasing lean muscle mass. So a lot of people tell me, well, I'm at the gym and I'm doing all these weights and I don't seem to be getting better. So their stress level and their blood sugar levels that have a huge effect on that. And this is a picture of the circadian rhythm. And if we look at where the cortisol is the lowest, it's usually right at midnight, you know, between 10 and midnight, depending on what your bedtime is. But right at midnight, it's usually the lowest. And it tends to rise gradually. This is actually not that accurate. This is a little bit off. This is more of a pretty picture than anything else. It comes up a little bit more slowly than that. In fact, my understanding is that it's pretty flatlined through till about 4, and then at 4 it starts to come up, so that at 8 it's at its peak. Some people who wake up during the night may have spikes in cortisol during the night. When people tell you they don't sleep through the night, it may be wise to delicately start questioning them about whether they were ever molested or robbed or their house was broken into in the middle of the night. Because people that have had that kind of experience tend to have a cortisol levels that stay on guard. Always ready to run away. And it's programmed into their nervous system. And there are ways that you can get around that. But it does take knowing what's going on. And then at 8 o'clock, it's usually at its peak, somewhere between 6 and 8. And that's so that your body can get ready for the day. It makes you alert. It says hello to the tissues. It wakes everything up. But then it just gradually comes down. It actually sharply comes down up to noon. I'll show you a picture of the lab test. It'll show you a much better version of it. But I liked this picture because it was pretty and colorful. But basically, it's just up and down, up and down, up and down, peaking at 8 a.m., lowest at 12 a.m., and then throughout the day going gradually down. And this is normal. But now if you're getting stressed, let's say at 10 a.m., your boss comes in and says, I need this tomorrow, and you start going into a sweat and you're excited, your cortisol may temporarily come up and then come back down. So stressors that trigger your adrenal response, we've talked about these. I just want to reiterate, it's usually not just one thing. And it's not enough to say, oh, how are you stressed? And they go, no, I'm pretty cool. You know, a lot of stressful things happen, but I handle it. You want to ask about other things. Could they have digestive imbalance, leaky gut, candida, parasites? And when you do a complete analysis, you'll be able to understand if that's happening. Inflammation, you talk about, ask them about inflammation, areas of pain in their body. Have they ever been diagnosed with an itis condition? You ask about their food stress. You ask what they're eating, not just to say, do you have a good diet? Do you eat fruits and vegetables? No, you need to ask and you need to dig, and you guys know how to do that. Obesity. Obesity is a stress that it triggers your adrenals. The fat tissue that's stored, the white adipose tissue, is a really potent source of C-reactive protein. C-reactive protein is an inflammatory marker. Immune system imbalance can create it. So if you have an allergy, or you have an autoimmune disease, or you have an immune deficiency condition, that's going to affect your adrenals and cause them to be responding. Now, of course, we talked about injuries and toxic exposures already, and then your quality and quantity of your sleep. If you eat too late at night, you have the response we just talked about. Similarly, we have a rise in insulin, and the rise in insulin suppresses growth hormone, which affects the quality of your sleep. Growth hormone is really critical for good sleep. And if you're doing things that suppress growth hormone, you're not going to get growth and repair during sleep. You're going to wake up exhausted. It's going to be stressful because you're not cleaning up the toxic environment as well as you could, and those toxins go back to stressing your adrenals. So some of the things that stress affects, and we'll look at cortisol for the same reasons we mentioned earlier, the way that cortisol affects the system, increases your blood sugar, and that's released from either muscles, liver, or fat, depending on the situation. For example, when you first get this really strong stress, like going down a roller coaster, or almost getting hit, or feeling like somebody's coming after you with a knife, that's an adrenaline rush. The adrenaline will go to fat stores because it's, you know, quick, easy, and get a little bit out of there. And what happens if you are chronically having those really high adrenaline situations happening is that your fat cells become adrenaline resistant. And these are people who are really having difficulty with dropping the weight. The fat cells are adrenaline resistant, so they don't release the fat when adrenaline asks them to. Cortisol has a preference for muscles and releasing the amino acids from the muscles and producing sugar from that. And then glucagon, another hormone, mostly goes to the liver. So that's usually, that's more the background non-stress hormone. But blood sugar can be released from any of these places at any given point in time. Increased heart rate, increased blood pressure. Why? So you can run away. Increased respiratory rate. It actually causes vasodilation of the bronchi. So when you have people that have very bad asthmatic kind of responses to things and their bronchi close down, they may carry what's called an EpiPen. That's epinephrine. That's adrenaline. And they get give themselves a shot of that to open up the airwaves. Okay, so it has some beneficial effects, but chronically, it's not good for you. You don't want to constantly keep your airwaves dilated by taking epinephrine. You have all the other effects like your heart rate and your blood pressure, and you'll have a problem in stress on your system, your physiologic stress. It shuts down your digestion because you don't want to be digesting while you're running away from a tiger. You want all the energy to go towards your extremities, and you don't want to spend a lot of time with food in your stomach and in your intestines. Decreases your immune function and decreases inflammation. So while you're stressed, people like get high and addicted to being stressed because during the stress, inflammation goes down. Why? Because cortisol is your natural form of the corticosteroids that people are put on for inflammatory disease. But we know the long-term effects, the negative effects of being on corticosteroids, right? Truncal obesity, thinning of skin and muscles, decreased immune function. That's a long-term exposure, so we don't want that. When you're constantly stressed or your patient is constantly stressed, it's like they're on corticosteroids. It's like they're on those steroid medications, and we know the side effects and downsides of those. And then decreased secretory IgA. This is big, and we'll see when we look at the saliva tests how we can tell whether somebody's been under chronic stress or if it's a short-term stress based on their level of secretory IgA. Secretory IgA is actually the lining, the antibody lining of mucous membranes, so the lungs, the sinuses, the digestive tract. And when you decrease the production of secretory IgA, that means that it's affecting your immune system, right? You're not protecting your body from foreign invaders. Let's get into assessing your patient for adrenal problems. A lot of times you're just going to know as soon as they open their mouth and start speaking to you. You can hear it. They're talking like this and they're saying, well, I've tried everything and I can't help it. And last week my husband did this and they do a lot of sighing. I got to calm myself down now. Just pretending. I could feel that in my body. I could feel my chest tightening. I could feel my heart racing. So you can create this in your body. And you can breathe and let go and use your heart math techniques that we've talked about before to get rid of that. So the assessment of the adrenals is like most other parts. There's many components. Symptoms, the surveys and interviews, the physical exam signs or physical signs that you can ask them about to look for on their own body with a virtual physical exam, or signs. Routine blood testing. It's an indirect measurement of adrenal, but there's certain indicators. We'll look at those. We'll review those in a little bit. That will suggest that there's an adrenal problem. It could be something else, but it's an indirect measure. Then there's the direct blood testing of adrenal hormones. And any medical doctors who test for adrenals that are not functional medicine doctors will usually just say, well, I don't think there's a problem. You know, there's never really a problem, but okay, I'll run a blood test. And they usually will run it first thing in the morning, which is fine. They're running it when your adrenal should be the highest, but they're not testing it throughout the rest of the day. And when we look at some of these saliva panels and you see how much it varies when there's stress, you'll see that just getting the first morning maybe give you some indication. If it's like super low, you know this person's having a problem. It's super high, you know they're really stressed. But if it's normal, it doesn't tell you anything, because I've got a lot of samples where I could show you where their first morning is normal and the rest of the day is shot. And they also need to measure DHEA sulfate, yeah, in the blood, in order to even make that cortisol number mean anything. And I'll show you when we look at ratios in a little bit. Saliva testing, as you can tell, is my favorite way to do it. And I also like looking at the adrenal part of the 24-hour urine comprehensive steroid panel. And that's a panel that Meridian Valley Labs does, and we'll be going through in detail in our hormone section. And they have a whole section that shows the different metabolites of the adrenals. It's complicated to go through. The saliva testing we'll go into more detail on right now. So the scorecards, that's what I gave you in module one, right? And we had a scorecard for your glands. You could just create a little piece of paper that if you're working with a lot of people with adrenal stress, you just create a pen and paper exam that has the questions, self-scoring. They could score it in a moment and say, whoa, I'm really high. So you ask them questions verbally. You ask them questions using a scorecard, using an assessment survey, and you get a score before you start to rebuild their adrenals. And then after they've been on a protocol for 2-3 months, you have them repeat the test to see if you're on the right track. It's a lot less expensive to repeat the test and a few of the physical exam signs I'm going to review for you than it is to spend $150 to do another test. Although I highly recommend with people with really stressed out adrenals with really bad findings the first time that you test within 3 months to make sure your protocol's on target. You can't just give somebody an adrenal protocol and say, here, have a good life. And I think there are a lot of people out there doing that, or at least that's the interpretation from some of the people that I've worked with, because they'll say, oh, I did that test 3 years ago. I'm like, great. You know, I'd love to see the results. And what did you do as well? Oh, he put me on some kind of drops. Oh, great. And how long did you take them for? Well, I took them for about 3 months. And then what happened with the retest? Oh, we didn't do a retest. I just stopped taking them. I figured it was done. That's not the way you work with people. You need to be going back and reassessing to make sure that what you changed is actually having an effect. And it could be just by doing the testing, the scorecard, how they're feeling, and also the exam stuff. But doing the test can be very helpful as well. So I'm just going to give you a quick review. Overactive adrenals, they can't fall asleep, or they fall asleep and they wake up several times throughout the night. They tend to be a night person. They say, oh, I get my second wind at 10 o'clock and I stay up till 2. It's a sign of either overactive adrenals or an adrenal that's out of rhythm. They perspire really easily. They're under high amounts of stress, and they gain weight when they're under stress. They may have high blood pressure. They may clench or grind their teeth. And they may have 8 hours of sleep and wake up feeling tired. They can't get up. They have it really hard to get up. And then excessive perspiration, or perspiration with little or no activity. So they could have easy perspiration and excessive perspiration. Low adrenals. And there's some overlap, obviously, between the two. There's also overlap between low adrenals and thyroid. And I gave you some charts in here. So a slow starter in the morning. It's like, oh, I just can't get started. I'm not myself until, you know, I have my cup of coffee and it's at least 10 a.m. They get ill frequently. This is another one that's big, is poor recovery from exercise. If you have someone that says to you, I love to exercise, but I can't anymore. I go to the gym and I work out, and then I'm just completely out of it for 2 or 3 days after that. I can barely move. That's a sign of adrenal fatigue. Does it mean that they cannot exercise at all? No, it doesn't. But you've got to find the level of activity that works well for them. Dark circles under their eyes. You see those people? And you ask them about their sleep and they've gotten plenty of sleep. You ask them if they have allergies. They don't. Those dark circles could be low adrenals. They can tend to have paleness, especially like a circle around their mouth. And some of these are hard to differentiate from thyroid, and I have a chart for you. Thin, dry, dull hair that tends to fall out. People have clumps of hair that come out. Well, how do you differentiate that from thyroid? Well, it's based on other symptoms. Sparse hair on forearms or lower legs. It's also a sign of thyroid. And thyroid and adrenal stuff go together a lot. The low adrenals can cause the thyroids to get low. And it's because of the HPA axis, the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis. Light sensitivity is also called photophobia. When you go out into the bright sunlight, it's blinding and you need sunglasses all the time. That's a sign of low adrenals. I'll notice that when I'm really pushing myself hard, I notice, oh my goodness, I'm so sensitive to sun. I know that I've been frying myself. I need to start to get more sleep and take care of my adrenals better. Dry skin, ligament and tendon laxity. Like somebody tells you, I've sprained my ankles 3 times in the last 2 years. Laxity of the ligaments. Cold intolerance. Again, that crosses the line with thyroid as well, cold intolerance, that you get cold all the time. Thyroid tends to be more extremities. Adrenals tends to be overall cold. But yeah, people that have low adrenals, that they're on the verge of adrenal burnout, they can be cold a lot. They crave salt because of the aldosterone interaction I told you before. And low blood pressure, especially when arising. We call that orthostatic hypotension. Orthostatic hypotension. Hypertension is high blood pressure. Hypotension is low blood pressure. So when they get up, they'll say, oh, whenever I get up real quick, the room spins, I get really dizzy. Probably their blood pressure went down. And in the physical exam part, you can actually take that, or you can teach them how to take their blood pressure. And that's a really nice way to monitor their progress without having to go back and do the labs so frequently. They may get a headache or exhaustion after exercise. And weak ligaments, we mentioned that. The exam signs. Their blood pressure goes down on standing. That's what I just mentioned. Orthostatic hypotension. And I go through exact details on how to measure that. When you shine a bright light in someone's eye, the pupil should constrict, and it should stay constricted while you continue to shine the light in there. So the way that you test it is you shine the light into their eye, and you watch how long the pupil stays constricted. If they can make it to 20 seconds, you can quit. If not, it's a sign that their adrenals are out of whack, that their adrenals are not able to mount the sympathetic response anymore that causes it to constrict or stay constricted. There's some testing that you can do where the rib margins, if you take your hand and go down the side of the body right where the rib hits on the side of the body, the tenderness there can tend to suggest that the adrenals are out of whack. Some of these signs are taken from Western medicine. Some of these signs are taken from Eastern medicine, Chinese medicine, and some of them are taken from kind of alternative Western medicine like applied kinesiology and various kinds of energetic testing techniques. Brown or black discoloration below the eyelids can be suggestive of adrenal fatigue. A dark gray or reddish back of the tongue can be suggestive of an adrenal problem. If they get a lot of ulcerations and canker sores, that can be an adrenal problem. They tend to have bad breath. That could be their adrenals. If they have rough, flaky cuticles, again, it goes back to the dry skin, but it's an easy thing to look at. That can be an adrenal problem. And there are various tongue signs that I showed you. I have pictures. And this is all outlined in your second module. I'm not going to go through these charts. I just wanted to put them here so you can at least be glancing over them. These are things that you can just use. And if you're looking at somebody and you want to differentiate, you can go through this chart and circle the things that you're finding for them. And you can see whether it's adrenals, mostly thyroid, mostly, or mostly mixed. And it just gives you an idea of where you need to be looking. A lot of people are in the mixed category. So just circle. Just go through with the person and circle things. You can ask them the questions. You can ask them to look on their bodies, or if you're examining them and they're in your office, you can examine them. And there's like 5 pages of these that you can go through. And it's just a wonderful chart. I gave you the reference where I found this chart. Really nice chart. And then same thing with blood tests. There's some comparisons here to help you to identify. So let's get into the meat of our conversation, which is lab testing for your adrenals. I'll show you the routine blood testing, the indirect way. And then as far as the direct lab testing of adrenal hormones, it's really just cortisol and DHEAS. I would recommend that you do them in the morning if you're going to do them at all. And if you are going to do them by blood, because that's the only way the doctor and the insurance will pay for the person, see if you can get them to go in 4 times during the day and get the circadian. Most docs don't do that, but I just threw it out there. There's a saliva testing. And that's what we're going to spend most of our time looking at. And as part of the 24-hour urine comprehensive steroid panel, and I have one example. In the routine blood screen adrenal analysis, if you have a low adrenal, you're going to see high potassium, low sodium, and possibly low glucose. If they have a hyperadrenal, you would see low potassium, high sodium, possibly excess glucose, and possibly excess triglycerides. It just depends on the stage that they're in. But it's a red flag. So if you see some of these numbers off, and I mean out of the ideal range, not just out of the lab range, then you have a bunch of symptoms that suggest adrenals, then you're probably looking at a person that has some adrenal dysfunction. This might be a little bit hard to see, and you'll get a lot more of these samples when we do our 24-hour urine hormone test for the basic all-over hormones. But there's a lot of metabolites you can see here. Cortisone, cortisol. There are all these different metabolites, and you can get a sense of whether they have good cortisol. Cortisol is your active, and cortisone is your storage. And when you have a ratio, which some of these things do on one of the other pages in here, when the ratio of the cortisol to the cortisone is high, it means that you're depleting your stores. You're heading towards adrenal fatigue. You're not in adrenal fatigue, but you're heading there. And that's a really nice thing about this test. But the reason I like saliva testing more than I like urine and blood testing is, number one, it's non-invasive and it's convenient. With the urine test, of course, it's not invasive, but you have to carry a bucket around for 24 hours and collect all your urine. If you miss one, you start all over again because it's not going to be accurate. So you have to collect all the urine for 24 hours. Whereas with the saliva, it's not the most convenient in the world because you have to collect your saliva 4 times. But 4 times is better than 24 hours, isn't it? And so it's not invasive, convenient. The specimen can be collected at home or at work. You know, it could get a little tricky at work. You maybe have to bring a little cold pack in so you can keep the specimen cold after you collect it. You may have to just go into the restroom and be in private to do it, or close the door of your office if you have one, but you can still do it. It's pretty precise. Why? Because it captures the hour-by-hour cycling. we're not taking it every hour, but we're taking it at critical points. So we're taking it generally at somewhere around 8 a.m., between 11 and 1, 11 a.m. and 1 p.m., the midday. Then there's at least once at between 4 and 5 in the afternoon. Around that time is when so many people get those slumps. Really nice to see. And then right at bedtime. There are a few different labs that do this. And you can also, for someone who has sleep problems, you can collect a fifth and a sixth specimen if they wake up in the middle of the night. You'd have to order those special or use a lab like Saber Sciences, which includes six as their norm. But if you use the labs like Diagnostics or Great Smokies or Metametrics or BioHealth, they all do four specimens. Diagnostics I've worked on where I can do what's called the Flexi Matrix. You ask them about the Flexi Matrix and you get to choose which pieces you want. And in that case, I can get six cortisols. The other thing about saliva versus blood is that it measures the bioactively available fraction. In the blood, it's measuring your protein-bound cortisol, and it may not be what's active in the tissue. And the samples can stay stable for several weeks. You can do the test and you can put it in the freezer. And, you know, if it's inconvenient to get to the post office, I always recommend doing it right away. But so let's talk about adrenal stress, adrenal dysfunction. There are a lot of different staging systems for this, and some of them are more complicated than others. After playing around with different ones, I've decided that I like the three-stage one, which I'm going to show you on the next slide. But this is the one that Diagnostics uses, and it's on the sheet that you get when you do the Diagnostics test. Adapted to stress means that you may have high levels of cortisol, but your DHEA is normal. So adapted to stress means you have high levels of cortisol, but your DHEA is good. So the stress isn't destroying you yet. The cortisols are high and they're causing havoc in your body, but it hasn't caused you to go into a bad situation. The next stage in this system is adapted with a DHEA slump, and that's what the BioHealth lab refers to as stage one. So your stress levels are either normal or high, and it may look pretty good. You look at it and the levels look like perfect, but the DHEA is low. That's a surefire sign that they are going into adrenal distress, that the pregnenolone steal has been happening big time and DHEA is going down. And that's what they call stage one in the BioHealth system. And then there's the maladapted, and there's phase one and phase two, and that's where your stage two is, where your cortisol levels start to go down. So stage two would be, the three and four here would be the stage two in the BioHealth system. In maladapted phase one, your cortisol levels are going down. They're going down, and your DHEA is down. And maladapted stage two is a more severe version of that. And then the next stage they talk about is non-adapted low reserves. That means that your cortisol levels are like on the floor. You got no reserves. And then you go into this other like last hurrah. The body tries desperately to gain it back. The DHEA goes high, and that's right before adrenal fatigue. Sometimes you're not really sure which stage they're in. The test will tell you what they think it's in. I don't usually go by what they say because a lot of times you have to read the test, and you'll understand that when I show you some of these. So that's the diagnostic system. I think it's pretty complicated. I like the simpler system that BioHealth uses. You look at a person who's normal. Their cortisols are normal and their DHEA is normal. In stage one, their cortisols are high and their DHEAs are low. They're starting to go down. There's oftentimes a phase in here in the early part, which I like to think about is the hyper state, the hyper stress state, where their cortisol levels are high, but their DHEA is still high. So they're not yet starting to lose it. But stage one of the adrenal exhaustion is where their cortisols are high, but their DHEAs are going down. Stage two, their cortisol levels may be normal, but their DHEA is low. So you go from cortisol high and DHEA low in stage one, cortisol normal, but DHEA low in stage two, And then in stage three, the cortisol's low and the DHEA is low and the failure. And right in between here, right before failure, you might see how the DHEA may do a last hurrah. And I'll show you on the actual lab result pages how we know the difference. I wanted to show you this because we talked about having to make sure that you're putting the fire out with your patient. And it's really, really important to know how the effect, how anger versus appreciation affect your levels of secretory IgA. Remember we said that cortisol chronically elevated decreases your level of secretory IgA. The Institute of Heart Math measured the levels of secretory IgA at 5 minutes after anger versus 5 minutes after care, appreciation. And you can see there was a major difference. With the anger, it went up a little bit at first, at 5 minutes, and then way, way down, and stayed really low. And took, after 7 or 8 hours, it wasn't even back up to the baseline. Whereas with the care, it went up, it stayed up a little longer, it took longer to go down, and then it went down to baseline, but then it stayed a little bit elevated out hours, and even almost at 8 hours, it had started to go up again. So this appreciation, care versus anger, learning to do the heart math techniques or tapping or doing your various and sundry kinds of meditations and things that bring your cortisol levels down, that put you in a state of appreciation, majorly important on your adrenals. So let's take a look at a couple of samples. We're going to go through three samples here on the slides. This is a stage one. And look at this. Free cortisol. This person, I didn't write it here because this is from the diagnostics and it's on a different page, but her DHEA level was 3. DHEA should be is 3 to 10. So it's actually 0 to 10 is the range that they'll measure. And the ideal is between 8 and 10. 7 to 8 is starting to get stressed. Anything below 7, you know, it's various degrees of stress all the way down. Some of them you'll see are 0.1. But this particular one was from diagnostics. I just put it up there because the graph is really pretty. This shows the normal rate. Remember I showed you that chart of the circadian rhythm and it looked just like a sine wave? It really doesn't look like a sine wave. This is what it looks like. It's higher in the morning. It comes down at noon dramatically. And then between noon and 4, it just decreases a little bit more. And it decreases a little bit more, so it's at its lowest point at midnight. And then during the night, it stays down until around 4 a.m. when it starts to come up. You can see that this person is really, really stressed. This is a person who has insomnia. She can't sleep. She wakes up constantly, constantly. This is why. Look how high her midnight cortisol is. She starts out at a reasonably strong level first thing in the morning, and then she gets progressively more stressed throughout the day. That's a stage one. This is an example of the BioHealth report, and this isn't as dramatic a case. See, the BioHealth gives you the afternoons. They all give you the sum, and I want to caution you about the sum. And I'll caution you about the sum because if a person has a spike at one time and they're really low in another, you can't just use the sum to give you an idea of how well they're producing, because they may look good. It may look perfectly within the normal range on the sum of the cortisols, but they may have one that's really high and one that's really low that throw the total sum off. They may be completely adrenally fatigued, except they have a big spike at midnight, and they're going to show up as normal if you just look at the sum. So it takes some practice going through these, and I want to teach you ways to go through these as we go through the cases. So we've got, she's high all over. The only time she was within the normal range was in the morning. You see that it's right there. And then it was midday. She was high. Afternoon, she had a spike. You're going to see that a lot. And when you see spikes in the middle of the afternoon, you want to ask them about their lunch, because oftentimes a high glycemic lunch will cause a spike in blood sugar and then a subsequent decline in blood sugar, and then the cortisol is coming up to try to raise the blood sugar enough. They also may have some major, major problems that happen, like at work all the time at that hour. This is a stage one as well. Let's look at a stage two and see if you see the difference. Now on here, the red line at the top is the high end of range. The green line at the bottom is the low end of the range. And then the gold line is the person's total. So if you look at this, you might think, well, this person, she's at the low end of normal here. She's at the middle. She's a little bit below, and then she goes up. This is a person who's really getting close to stage three. She's barely in the normal range in the cortisols. To me, she's depleted, but she's not completely depleted as in a stage three. And look at her DHEA. Her DHEA is 2.6. She's at the bottom of the barrel. The reference range is not necessarily the ideal range. You really want people to be on the cortisols. Right in the middle is nice, not too high, not too low. And on the DHEA, towards the top is actually better. So between 8 and 10 is there a really hefty, hearty supply. So diagnostics example 3. So I switched back and forth just so you see. This is an older one. They didn't have the pretty graphs. They just had the different kinds of graphs. And now I really like their graph much better. It's pretty and it's real easy to see. But on this particular one, we've got the blue dotted lines are the normal range, the high and the low. And then the black with the squares at the bottom, that's the person. So you could see, and this person had a, I think it was a DHEA of 2. So you can see this person's depleted, okay? And then they've got low cortisol in the first thing in the morning, low at noon, low at 4 p.m., and low at midnight. This is a stage 3. So I just wanted to give you an example of a stage 1, 2, and 3.